The first time I ever visited San Quentin State Prison, I was quite green and didn't understand the prison system. After the class, the founder of Prison Yoga Project, James Fox, was glowing because these were his guys that he was teaching yoga and meditation to for years. And he said, "Did you see them light up?" After I heard him say that, I realized that paying attention is a form of a question. Acknowledging others, whether you say anything or not, but just honor them and pay attention in a way that they feel that they exist. And that was the first time that I knew how powerful it was to ask that question. Hello, you matter. How are you?
Albert Einstein said, "Don't think about why you question, simply don't stop questioning." Welcome to Curated Questions. I am your host, Ken Woodward. And these questions are not mathematical equations, but rather a resource to encounter personal reflection and growth. As Tupac Shakur stated, even the genius asks questions. Now, let's engage the questioning community.
You were in for quite the treat with this conversation with Robert. I want to provide a content warning regarding the 8 minutes we talk about the industrial complex that conducts product testing on animals. We don't delve into too many details at the hour and 7 minute mark, but we dedicate time to this vital work that Robert and Otis are bringing to awareness. Speaking of awareness, please hit the follow or subscribe button on your podcast player. This way, you can set it once and forget tracking down each weekly episode. This makes your life easier and signals to the algorithms that the show should be recommended to other listeners, a simple act that can have an outsized impact. Now, on with the show. Greetings. Ken Woodward here. Welcome back to another episode of Curated Questions. Together, we engage inquisitive humans about how they use questions to navigate and make sense of our world. I'm a fellow traveler and pilgrim on this journey, and I'm glad you are here. Today's conversation is with Robert Sturman. Robert is a seeker and visual storyteller, driven by an unshakable belief that beauty exists everywhere. He has pursued this vision as an official artist of the Grammy Awards and the FIFA World Cup, and is a globally recognized photographer who captures the healing power of humanity through yoga. After studying at UC Santa Cruz and Memphis College of Art, he discovered that his life itself was art and needed to become a masterpiece. Robert has mastered finding profound beauty in unexpected places, from the streets of Manhattan to San Quentin Prison, from Kenyan orphans to breast cancer survivors bearing their scars. His philosophy is rooted in Rumi's words, "I can't stop pointing to the beauty." Through his lens, Robert demonstrates that everyone belongs and vulnerability becomes strength. His approach reveals that the most potent questions aren't about technique, but about trust, connection, and helping people recognize their own light. He seeks beauty where others see difficulty, because he understands transformation happens when we're willing to look deeper. The most heartfelt title he answers to is Dad, to Otis the Handsome Hound, an 85-pound English-American red tick coonhound who was rescued following animal testing. Otis has nearly 7,000 Instagram followers and is an advocate for cruelty-free testing. I first encountered Robert's work in 2018 while pursuing questions about meditation and yoga. It was a joy to watch him foster his deep friendship with Tao Porshan Lynch, then a 99-year-old yoga teacher. Robert, welcome to Curated Questions.
Thank you, Ken. That was quite beautiful and warmed my heart to think about some of the things that you mentioned there. Thank you.
You're quite welcome. You've had quite the career, and I look forward to being able to dive in and talk about how some of those things actually worked. I do like to jump off with my standard first question, and that is, when did you first understand the power of questions?
I believe that it was a process, but one of the main things that happened was the first time I ever visited San Quentin State Prison. I was quite green and didn't understand the prison system very well. And I didn't make any mistakes, but it was just very new to me. And when I work, I'm very much engaged as I look and see and create art of the people that I'm working with. And I remember after the class, the founder of Prison Yoga Project, James Fox, he was glowing because these were his guys that he was teaching yoga and meditation to for years. And he said, "Did you see them light up?" And I didn't know them, so I didn't have any way of knowing the difference between lighting up or not. But after I heard him say that, I realized that paying attention is a form of a question. And acknowledging others, whether you say anything or not, but just honor them and pay attention in a way that they feel that they exist. And that was the first time that I knew how powerful it was to ask that question. Hello, you matter. How are you?
Wow. So just as a point of reference, how is it that you ended up in San Quentin prison taking pictures of folks? Because that doesn't seem like the normal thing. The posturing is more about how dangerous or, you know, kind of the darker side of humanity that we're seeing in prison. Just even in your description, how is it that you ended up doing that project?
Well, exactly what you say is how the media portrays prison. Is that's why when I said I went in, I was pretty green, because I didn't realize that there's a whole world in there. And what they show on the media, it's just what they do. It's not necessarily what prison life is like. Sure, that's there. But I'd always heard the term yoga world. But the yoga world that I was photographing was a very homogenous world. And when I was younger, I had a desire to be a photographer of the world, and like National Geographic and Life magazine photographers profoundly inspired me and influenced my career. And I found that the yoga world was the whole world. So I realized I could use this as the language to tell an incredibly positive and hopeful story about humanity through this beautiful language of yoga, in which human beings were in pursuit of healing. And what greater place to tell that story than inside of maximum security notorious prisons?
Absolutely. Anytime we hear the name San Quentin, I would say that it probably is up there at the top of the list of those places that we see or imagine as the toughest or the roughest kind of places. Let's go back a little bit further then. How did you get started with yoga? How did that become such a passion? It would drive, this is the lens through which I want to see the world.
I grew up in Los Angeles, so there was always yoga in the background. You'd hear of it. And I didn't know much about it, but I did have this idea that the people that did the yoga had superpowers and could deal with things better, like through meditation. And I was conditioned to believe that, which absolutely can be true. Not necessarily superpowers, but I just mean be able to handle life gracefully, deal with challenges. And I equated yoga and meditation with being able to do that. And there was a moment in my life where they were discontinuing a certain kind of Polaroid film that I used that really blew up my career. And things were going incredibly well. And then that film, they retired it. And as I was transitioning out of using that process and having to reinvent myself, I decided that I would start practicing yoga because I wanted those superpowers and to be able to handle a massive shift in life where my world was crumbling underneath me. So I volunteered for a magazine, and every month, because a lot of artists immerse themselves into something that they're creating art of in order to have more of that be part of them. So I volunteered, and I would photograph a teacher, a yoga teacher, once a month for the teacher profile. And then I just started to do this series on the beach. And it was kind of a series that evoked Picasso's acrobats in the south of France. It was very happy and idealistic of these practitioners playing by the sea. It was very glorified and beautiful. I did this incredible series doing that while I was cultivating tools to be a better human being with better survival tools. And that's how it started. But from there, I'll tell you, that led into going into prisons and photographing veterans and active duty military and any human being I could find that was trying to be better at life through this beautiful practice.
As you were doing those sessions on the beach, and for everyone listening in the show notes, we'll obviously link to Robert's work and his site, and please check out his Instagram and all of his work. You'll quickly understand what he's talking about by this particular series. Now, as you were going through that, was there a question at some point that you're like, huh, okay, I'm having a great time doing this particular series. I wonder where else folks are doing yoga. Was that potentially a question that was in there someplace that to go beyond just this one particular setting?
Okay, I'll tell you how it all happened. And I'll say it with more clarity than before. The Polaroid technique is a process of photography in which once the image comes out of the camera, this particular film had a defect so that there was a window of time that I could use different tools like car keys or pen caps to carve into the surface and accentuate the lines and the forms while the emulsion was still malleable. So it was a very painterly form of photography. And when they announced they were going out of business, they divided up the film to certain artists who had created serious bodies of work with their product. Yeah. And I was one of those artists. And so I devoted my last 1,000 sheets of film, Polaroid pictures, to this yoga series. It's a camera that the film comes right out and it's expensive. So what you learn is how to be precise, how to not make mistakes, how to look, how to see, and then make the photograph and not shoot like a tourist shooting 10,000 images with a prayer to hopefully get one. So that practice alone primed me for what I would eventually call the yoga of seeing. When that became extinct, I had to transition into a digital camera. So that's when I started to branch out into the prisons and with the veterans and with the whole world. But during the process, this is very important, during the process that I photographed that idealistic, beautiful yogis on the beach series, I experienced quite a bit of criticism and hate from, not quite a bit, but it came. And I listened to that. And the main concern was, why don't you photograph real people? So, and that was a common statement that I would hear on social media. And I never would argue, but it would inspire me to ask the question, okay, what are they talking about? How can I understand this? Obviously, there's messaging there, even if they're saying it in a mean way.
Yeah.
There's messaging there to help me evolve. And that's when I really started to look at inclusivity, equality, and photographing the whole world.
For all the hate that's out there on the socials, that is a, I guess, courageous, might be a word, humble, but just that step of looking for what ways could this be true, perhaps. I would just say it's just got to take some internal fortitude, because the internet's full of people that will hate on kitty cats and puppy videos or whatever. So the fact that this is an art that you've been spending so much time with, and then to get these comments and to be able to evaluate that and say, huh, okay, what aspect of this should I take on and apply? How did that process work for you? Is that just mulling that over?
It was what I really wanted to do. What I was doing with the first series that I did with yoga was also something I wanted to do, but expanding into global celebration of humanity was a much bigger project. And those were just nudges, clues. Mm. Even though at the time it's like, oh, they hurt me, that doesn't feel nice, or whatever, all that kind of stuff. But it was a consistent enough discussion that it inspired me to really look at it. And they were right. And that led to photographing all of humanity, from cops and firefighters to people practicing yoga at the Braille Institute to children all over the world in orphanages to people, like you said, breast cancer survivors and people missing limbs, just the whole world. And so it became something that excited me. And then I made it my mission to get these things on the cover of Yoga Journal.
What was the underlying desire to get those onto the covers?
Because up until the last few years, the covers were just skinny, very attractive females. And that's not an honest interpretation of the yoga world. There's also amputees, soldiers, senior citizens, full-figured people, men.
I really do appreciate your heart to expand the vision for those within the community, but also those from without the community, to understand who all is a practitioner of yoga and those that get benefit from it. It really is something to see the body of work regarding all of these other kind of people groups, if you will, that most of the time are not on the magazine covers.
Yeah. And seriously, Ken, I know you're a veteran, but for me, I'm a city slicker, and I had no integration with the military. How else in this world would I be invited and welcomed into communities than with the camera and telling this story? So it's been such a gift. Like, what other way would I be able to go to prison except for committing a crime?
How do you kind of prepare your heart for looking at these new communities as you approach them for the first time? What kind of things do you think about? Are you studying them beforehand or just going cold? How has that worked out for you so far?
I think that just going in to a session with the camera, the lens, and having this single, ferocious desire to just see light and celebrate it. For me, it's what I need to do to tell that story, to point towards the beauty. And I think that while I'm in that, it's intoxicating for the people being photographed, that they feel it. And what happened in prison, they light up when they're paid attention to and honored And trust is built when you're in that zone where, you know, you just like, I mean, because prison is, they'll see, and the military, these, you can't fool certain people on this planet. You have to be for real. And they feel it. And that's how you gain trust. That's what the art is born out of, that connection. So how I prepare myself by just trying to be the best, most centered, relaxed, healthy human being that I possibly can.
It seems like, to me, that's just a good way to live. So the fact that you're getting reps and sets by doing these photo shoots with these folks and being able to just be that fully present self, being in the moment and looking for the beauty, seems like a good way to live life. Now, in getting to know the people that you're doing this art with, do you use questions at all? Is that a part of any of your routine?
The only questions that I ask are the ones that I'm just curious about their life. And for me, like, I've really thought about that a lot since you invited me here, is how I, like, literally use questions. And to me, it's the same thing about when I'm looking through the camera, that it's about being interested. It's about, rather than focus on being interesting, be genuinely interested in who you're talking to, what someone's name is, if it's someone older than you, to ask questions that only they know, that's telling their history, like, what kind of car did you drive when you came from New York to California? How much was gas? Or, you know, just questions about their life. And really be, I mean, everybody's a movie. And so I find that just like the desire to see people's light and create art and make photographs with them, when you're just in a conversation and paying attention to them and interested, people light up. There's so much healing in that. The camera is just an excuse to be able to pay attention to others. Because a lot of the people that I photograph will never even see the photographs. It's about the moment that we spend. Wow. Like, for instance, when I went into the Braille Institute, that's the yoga program there for the blind, I would think that most of them didn't even know what a photograph was. So I was deeply struck by the generosity of them allowing me to see them and make photographs with them, photographs that they themselves could not see. And that really informed me that it's so much more important, our connection and the kindness that we bring to it.
The witnessing of others really is remarkable. As a species, we are about connection, community, and the rest. And today we get less of that because of the electronics in the world that we live in. To think taking pictures of the blind, they will never see these pictures. But that really is a way to build that connection, to say that you are seen and I am witnessing your life and we are doing this exchange. It just seems like that it is a real gift. I mean, it's to each other, but also greater humanity.
It's instances like that, especially. I feel it with all of the people that I work with, but with that is, You don't want to lie, you know, pretend, to cheat, to steal, to go in there and take something from the people that we're working with. And that's why, for instance, I don't say that I take pictures. I make photographs with people.
I really do appreciate that perspective. I don't know how real it is because it's just been seen in movies, but I remember seeing where indigenous folks would say, yeah, I don't want you taking my picture because my spirit is then captured or something like that. To your point of that is taking, but your heart is, let's do this together. And so then it becomes a co-creation piece of art, vice just a transactional, I'm here to do this. Let me, quote, take your picture. So that just seems that it would create such that much more of a magical time. And I could understand why folks would literally light up with that kind of care and perspective. What kind of experiences are you still looking to do or is on your shot list of, yep, you want to do these kind of opportunities?
I anticipate going into more prisons around the world and creating a prolific body of work of healing happening in the prison system. And that's something that very much excites me because I know it's so evident to me that photographs are, if not the most powerful way to shift perceptions and evolve humanity in a direction, in my case, hopefully a positive direction. Let me use the military as an example. When I first photographed people wearing uniforms and having guns, it was just shocking to people to see this, to see soldiers doing peaceful warrior pose or any pose, meditating. And it was jarring to people to see that. And there were a lot of arguments, and there still are, like, how could, you know, they do this, they do that. And for me, it's about evolving us in a more positive direction. I mean, you know firsthand, but there is a lot of trauma. Whether people agree with it or not, these tools are important. No matter what someone did, they're important. We need tools. I need tools. And I haven't had any experiences like that. I can't even imagine what it would be like to see my friend killed or any of the numerous things that happen to people who are in service. I realize that if I make powerful pictures of these great ideas, like human beings who are in the military cultivating tools like yoga and meditation, then if they see that picture or a number of pictures with that idea enough, then they get used to it. And it starts to integrate into the culture. So I realized that the camera was this powerful, magical box that could inspire humanity to embrace great ideas and make those great ideas the new normal.
I think about just the concept of therapy and how that continues to be adopted more and more. As I look back, military and throughout the culture, that had very much been kind of poo-pooed and just not embraced. Then as you talk with military members who have been in horrific circumstances doing the job that they are called to do, and for those that do embrace and take advantage of tools that are out there, life is much better. It doesn't mean that it's all better, it's just better. Yeah, getting these pictures out there of military members doing these yoga poses and being able to normalize a little bit, then hopefully some of those hardcore folks that think no and poo-poo the idea, yeah, maybe they will give it a go and start to experience some of that, the healing that can come. Have you encountered stories of how your images have challenged and changed organizations or people?
I have received quite a few notes from people that said that they started yoga and meditation after seeing it portrayed in my work. So I've had a lot of that. I've had a tremendous amount of people reach out and tell me that they started doing a training to go into prisons to teach as a result of seeing the work and inspired them. So the work does the work. And the amazing thing about photography is it keeps on working when I go somewhere else. It's remarkable.
On the prison front, what are some things that we get wrong about prison?
Well, that they're all criminals. They might have been convicted of a crime and done a crime, but that doesn't make them a criminal forever. Mm. And there are a lot of people in the system that know they're going to get out. And even if they're not going to get out, they want to get better. They want to heal. And there's a lot of good things going on inside the prison system. And there's a tremendous amount of sincerity and longing to connect and heal. And I think that's a big thing, like what we mentioned before, that all we see are stabbings and riots and things of this nature. But San Quentin is, I believe, in the U.S., it's the most advanced. There's so many volunteers that come in and teach programs. And so, like, once when I was coming out of a class in San Quentin, one of the guys I was working with said, he said he had to go, and he had a book in his hand called Nonviolent Communication. And he was rushing from the yoga class to nonviolent communication. So there is a lot of healing going inside the prison system. There we go. The most notorious prison in the United States is one of the more educational healing institutions.
That's beautiful. In that, I think about those folks that have gone to prison, and so now they have paid the debt that a judge or jury said that this is what they needed to pay for whatever crime it was. And then what does reconciliation to society look like? And how can they best become a thriving member? Because, okay, now it's done, right? You know, if I got a speeding ticket, I pay the fine and then I move on. I'm not moving through the world and everyone saying, that guy is a speeder because, you know,
exactly right.
You know, he got a speeding ticket and that's what we're going to hold over his head. It's like, no, I paid the fine and off I go. So
that's a great analogy, speeder.
There was one guy that I enjoyed a conversation with. And he had mentioned that he had been to prison, and I intentionally never asked him why he was there, because I don't want that to color my impression of him or the conversation of the human that I'm talking to right now. It doesn't matter. He's here. Whatever it was done, and, you know, past an opening, we're moving forward.
And I agree with you. I've never asked either.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
At the end of 2017, I was reflecting back on life, and I was just doing the commuting back and forth to work. And then just my wife at the house, kids were out of the house. And I was thinking that I just don't know a lot of the stories about other folks. And one of them was, I didn't know anyone personally that had spent time in prison. And it's like, okay, good on you for being in your little bubble and, you know, living a clean, squeaky life or however you want to characterize it. But there's a massive amount of people in this country that have passed through the prison system
on the incarceration system. And for me to not have anyone, like zero, that just meant that I didn't understand and understand how the impacts on a family when someone gets put in prison. How does everybody else have to bring resources and all those kind of things? And so I reached out specifically in 2018. I had a bunch of conversations with people, and one group that I was looking to have conversations with were people who had been incarcerated to get a better understanding of what it is like inside, but then also how do the families work outside during those time periods. Hugely eye-opening.
Mm.
As you think about your work itself, have you used questions at all in developing either your trust in your work or your processes for how you see the world through photography?
I really, really thought about this as you presented it to me. And the only thing that I could come up with was, how can I be better? I think that's the only question that I ask myself.
And what does that apply to all ways as far as how you are developing or working digitally or setting up the shot? Or is it all of that stuff or that, in a particular
that's the
area?
Lowest, that's the lowest on the list. I was thinking a better son, a better brother, a better friend, a better friend to myself. And of course, yes, a better photographer and better at post-production and better at marketing. And of course, those things. But I was really thinking about the things that are going to matter the most. Because asking that question opens up a whole world of how you're going to live your life. Is that when you asked me that question, am I following you? Because I really looked at that one.
So the beautiful thing is that I'm not coming with a rubric that says you answered it right.
Okay, so I didn't get a C minus.
You did not get a C minus at all. There is no grading. I love how intentional you were in really thinking through. Is through the emails going back and forth, I know that you were legitimately thinking about these, this idea of questions and how they work in your life. I love that. And the fact that where you see it most is in that question of how can I be better? And then applying it those real macro level items as far as humanity goes, not just strictly the work.
Yeah, because how can I be better means how can I make use of this time that I have in the most extraordinary way I can with the most clarity. So that will lead to, well, does drinking alcohol fog you? Maybe you don't want to do that. So it leads to everything. It inspires everything. It informs everything.
I'm going to make a statement and then you correct me if I'm wrong on this. It sounds like it's been a question that you've been carrying with you for quite a while then.
How can I be better?
Yeah.
Well, I realized that I got this a couple years ago, got this 5-minute journal. I think that's what it's called, the 5-minute journal. I'd seen it on the desk of someone that very much inspired me, so I ordered it. And every morning it asked, what am I grateful for? I would just consistently put that I have an opportunity to be better. A new day, a new opportunity to be better.
In you carrying that recognition, it sounds like you're carrying it as an opportunity vice an obligation.
Yeah, well, it's an obligation. It's an opportunity. But I feel like when it comes time to die and you go over what you've done, like there's going to be certain things that are going to be very important. You're not going to brag about, well, I made this deal, made money or whatever. You know, there's certain things that I probably wouldn't mention. But the things like, well, I stepped up to the occasion when I adopted an animal testing survivor to learn about animal testing and learn to become a voice for the voiceless so that I could spread awareness about how we can evolve out of that barbaric treatment towards animals. So that's an example.
Other than the 5-minute journal inspiring that, had that already been kind of a question or a kind of a thought that you were already living with?
It was, but I don't think it was until recently that I started to put it all together, that it's time to get my shit together. You know, at 55 years old, you just start realizing that you don't have as much time as you once did. And I want to make use of my life and not consistently forget about today until tomorrow. Just push things away. It occurred to me that it had to start happening right now. And I never, like you, for instance, you joined the Navy, you were in the submarine, you had a very serious job and very disciplined. So for me, I've always had no boss, no discipline, no structure. I've managed to succeed, but I wondered at what it would be like to take on some of the qualities that my new friends like you have. What if I can be an artist that has this mindset, that has this kind of discipline, that takes it seriously, that structures time, that may not have a drill sergeant yelling at me. But so that helped the shift too. And I think that's one of the reasons I was so drawn to the military and so fascinated with, you know, like when we hang out, I'm going to ask you, what was boot camp like? What was your nickname? What was this? Well, it fascinates me because I've never had any of that kind of thing. And I also know that I want more of that in my free-flowing butterfly existence, that it wasn't working for me anymore.
So I'm actually kind of doing some of the opposite journey in that having that structure and now shifting to doing this podcasting, coaching, speaking over on this end. And I'm also 55, very much at this transition where it's like, working in this world without all of that structure is like, whoa, hold on. There's supposed to be all of this framework and no, it's not there. Just go make it happen. Go make the magic happen. So that could be, this is a whole new world. That is for sure.
I love that. Seriously, Ken, because that's what we're doing. We're bridging the left and the right. And that's ultimately what we want to be. We want to be integrated, like Leonardo da Vinci. So a lot of my military friends have said the poet is just itching to get out. Like, for instance, this is an F-18 fighter pilot, Lieutenant Commander Elizabeth Corwin. There's a little bit of a glare. There we go.
Yep.
And she's become my most frequent and luminous subject. And imagine going from flying F-18s to becoming a yoga teacher, a poet, and just letting that whole world come out.
Yes. It is strange to come from a more constrained, structured, controlled environment to kind of turning on the spigot and letting that flow happen. It really is a whole new world for those that take those steps. A former coworker, so he had been a explosive ordnance guy in the Navy, and I worked with him at the Pentagon. So the top of the civilian pay scale, we were doing mine warfare stuff, and it was a tragic circumstance, the death of his daughter, but she had passed away. and his wife works with an international organization. So he shifted and became a yoga instructor. I think it was Dubai. It was just so dramatic to see this guy that had all of this particular experience now posting about doing a yoga practitioner and getting a certification and all the rest. It was just remarkable to see that transition for him.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm sure people are saying that about witnessing your transition from into this whole creative podcasting world.
Yeah, for me, there's been so many changes over the past few years that those that have known me for a long time are probably like, this is just another phase or another cycle of this Ken Woodward guy evolving. At the same time, lots of friends have been proud and, like you say, just enjoyed watching this evolution. I'm certainly living it, although the anxiety of the uncertainty is there, but that's okay. Now, regarding transitions, so if we go back to the difference in Polaroid, because you had said that that was such a transformational moment for you. How did you work through recognizing that this way that you had been doing things, how you had built your name, if you will, and now this is outside of your control, company's not going to be making the film anymore. How did you work through that and to be able to come through and land on your feet with this new direction? What did that journey look like for you?
I was scared because I had risen to a level of recognition that was nice. So I was scared and I tried to invent a computer program where I could do it or other things that I could do it, but it never was the same because this was done by the hand. And then I just accepted that that was done, that I did this prolific global body of work using this technique that will never be replicated. And then right about that time, I started to go into the prisons. I bought a digital camera. I bought the cheapest one I could find. I didn't know anything about lenses because I used the magic box, the Polaroid, which was just a 1970s camera.
Wow.
But when I went to the new technology, it was like I had been trying to run a marathon in a pair of high heels, and all of a sudden somebody gave me a pair of Nikes.
Mm.
I had been trained so well to see the light, like how the light was working on my subject, because I did not want to make mistakes and waste money on the film. And there was only so much film. So then the prison led to me just photographing regular people with a regular camera. And then I just became involved in that. And then one day, this was a pretty monumental moment. A woman signed up for a shoot and asked if she could wear her army uniform. And she must have seen the prison work. So she was equated me photographing outliers and telling their stories. And I thought, sure, I had never been around a soldier. And I thought that was neat. Yeah. I still am starstruck whenever I'm around anyone in the service, to tell you the truth. And so when I started to photograph her and then share that work, that's when I realized that this was a new world. This was a world about great idea. It was no longer a world about me just making beautiful photographs of beautiful things. And it was a world about integrating documentary photography with journalism mixed with sharing ideas that matter. And ideas that matter are, for instance, people practicing yoga in situations where they really need it. And that became so much more valuable to me than just making beautiful things that were artistic, that might do well in the galleries and on people's walls and the whole nine. But, you know, if I was doing all that and making a ton of money doing that, then I know something was missing. Like, I'd have this itch, this longing, like, I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I don't have that anymore.
Did you actually have that sense prior, before Polaroid said they were no longer going to make the film? Did you have that sense at that time that that was missing?
I did. And then that isn't that how life is? We already know, and then something will happen. Like, for instance, you know, you want to change course and then there's a pandemic. Like, a lot of us knew that we wanted to change our lives, and then we were forced to.
Yeah.
So I knew that there was just something more, that I wanted to be an artist of the world.
Poet David White mentioned our conscious life is about 4 or 5 years behind our unconscious life and the thresholds that we'll be crossing. I just absolutely love that explanation for certainly what I've been experiencing, but it sounds like that's similar, or another way of saying what you were experiencing, that you're like, my conscious life is moving along, taking these pictures, but there's this other threshold that's out ahead of me and I'm going to be moving in that direction. And then it was Polaroid making their decision that helped kickstart that whole process.
Yeah. I think that touching upon what you said about the, 5 years, that's, the unconscious is 5 years ahead of the conscious.
So. Well, he said 4 to 5 years. I'm not sure what the actual scientific demarcation is, but that's okay. What he was positing, yes.
So with that said, when I go into a shoot, the agreement has already been made without asking all the questions, is what I'm trying to say. Just like what I gather that he's saying is that our intelligence, like the unconscious is an intelligence, and that's how we are with people before we even talk to them. We already feel it and have these contracts in place. Like, I feel like if we were really in touch, really tuned in, we wouldn't need to even get to know people. We already know them. And that's why when you asked me if I ask the people I'm working with questions, if I'm in that intelligence, there's no questions.
I'm thinking an example where that might have been demonstrated for you was that shoot that you did with Val Kilmer. I had seen some of what you had written about, which, great picture, but you had done that in 10 exposures. So you're like, and he said, okay, wait, we're done already, or something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe that's an example of where that was happening and your ability to connect and just slip in to be able to work at that lower level, if you will.
Yeah. With just being in, just trusting that. And that's another thing that I learned from the Polaroid, is the ability to see something and mindfully be in awareness of what you're seeing and making a photograph of, push the button and then walk away, rather than the neurosis that comes over. Because there's just neurosis. Mm. Like, I might not have gotten it. I got to keep clicking and clicking. But to have the courage and the knowingness to just be like, oh, I got it. And with Val, it was, I'd known he'd been photographed so many times, and he was very uncomfortable that day and at that stage of his life of being in the camera, because the paparazzi had not been very kind to him in recent times because he had put on a little bit of weight. And so I knew he was just doing it because he's a nice man. And it was for a magazine cover. And he just had to do it. But I knew it was uncomfortable. And I looked in the camera and I was just like, that's as good as it's going to get. And that was really important for me to do because our tendency is to be neurotic and uncertain.
In today's world where we are bombarded by the images and the need to strive for perfection and the ability to take 10,000 shots with the camera, it seems like that's only fueling that neurosis that says, keep going, keep going, keep going. And your willingness to push back on that by virtue of saying, this is good. This is good.
That feels very rewarding to be clear enough and confident enough, even though you could fail.
What do you think is a way to develop that courage?
Intention, but clarity. I don't know how other people do it, but I do it from meditation, being clear about the things that I want in life, just coming into it with a clarity, and be good at your craft so that it just comes out. And just, step into the knowingness. I hope that doesn't sound too airy-fairy.
That knowingness.
I love that I'm telling someone in the Navy that. Correct me or tell me if I'm being airy-fairy.
Well, so how have you known that you were in that space? Was it a physical manifestation? Was it just the confidence or what you were seeing through the lens? How is it that you knew that you're in this, for lack of a better term, flow state? If we want to use that, I don't know if that's a good word. How do you know that?
I think you just feel it. You just feel it, and it's in the work. For me as an artist, because I'm so excited about what I'm seeing, that's how I know. I know when I'm just looking at something and it's just, it's so extraordinary. It's so beautiful. And I'm at, like, completely in love with what I'm seeing and excited about it. That's how I know. That's how I know. When the light is on something just right, or when I'm moving around and I'm finding it. And that's what happens when I'm holding this in my hands. That's my only mission. And that's why it comes easy to me, because it's simple. It's all I have to do is just see beauty and enjoy what I'm seeing. I mean, I should carry this around all the time. It'll make me a better person. Everywhere I went, I was just, oh, wow. Oh, my God. You are so beautiful, or whatever it is. That happens when I'm holding the camera.
I'm going to ask the question, is it about taste? But it almost seems that because you have been looking for beauty for so long, you're able to pick up on perhaps traces of beauty and look at things in such a way that others might miss, whether it's a glimpse or a little shaft of light or something like that, that you're able to pick up on and really appreciate and perhaps enhance. Does that resonate at all? Getting closer?
It does, but it comes back to, and this is the core of what the curated question is that I'm interested. My question, that's my question, is I'm interested in you. I don't need to ask the specific questions, but I want to know you. Like you matter. I want to know you. And that kind of energy is, it's a dance. that I have with the people that I'm working with. And when they feel it, they light up. And then when they see the picture, they're seeing something, the light in themselves. And there's a way that we can step more into that when we see it. Like, here's an example of something that happened to me early on in my career. When I photographed the teachers once a month, one of the teachers offered to give me a private yoga class after. And I was new to yoga and the class, so we were doing it and it was all new. And yoga, it's not easy. It wasn't easy for me at first. All new muscles and the body was shaking and everything. And I was very clumsy and doing everything wrong and just completely feeling like, you know, like I just so beginner. And then I did something and he said, "Robert, that's a beautiful, you have a beautiful practice," like for one little thing I did. And even though I questioned whether he was full of it or not, the fact that he cared, the fact that maybe it was sort of decent, it fueled me to keep going. And that's what photographs do. That's what paying attention. That's what smiling at another human being does. It acknowledges them. The way I do it is with a camera, but it can be done when somebody delivers the mail. It's the quality that we bring to the experience of being interested. And really, that's what I got out of what this concept is, that for me, the question is just caring about life. That's asking the question.
You had recently done a post with Otis, and it was about perspective. One was an overhead shot. You're standing from your full height looking down on Otis, and it looked like any other dog on the beach where it's like, okay, yep, that's a dog. I recognize that. Right. That's what the being is that we're looking at it. And then you had taken another shot from very much at his eye level. He may have even been a little bit below. But that perspective in bringing, in finding the beauty and meeting the being where they're at their level, very much captures your experience or where you're finding the beauty, is that you will meet folks or beings, in this case, Otis, where they're at to find the beauty and capture that.
One of the major themes of my work is never to look down on anyone. You're talking about a technical aspect of it, and I'll get to that in a second, but I'm photographing humanity, or in the case that you're saying, a dog, as an equal. Not looking down. We're all human beings. We're all doing our best. At least the photographs, the people that I'm working with are trying to be better. So that's the theme of it. But how it literally can be interpreted is that I never look down on someone when I'm photographing them. Because first of all, it makes the child or the person who's not as tall as you look smaller. Or the animal. So if I go on someone's level, they look statuesque, proud, like they belong. Not only does it change the way we see what we're looking at, it also changes the way that people see themselves. Like when a child sees a photograph of them looking really small, looking up at the camera, as opposed to equal, there's a big difference. And I think that I realized that when I would see pictures of children and dogs and cats, and they would just look so small And it was sad, like they were looked down upon.
Just different pictures are clicking through my mind of young family members. And that is the way we oftentimes will take the pictures. And yeah, the subjects become small. Who wants to go through life being most of the pressures around us are trying to make us look small and feel small. So better, how can we honor their full humanity or their full being just by changing our perspective?
Yeah.
How was a remarkable yoga instructor. As I was looking at your pictures of her, so she passed away at 101, I believe. Is that right?
Yes.
She is just seemingly a glorious woman. I never had a chance to meet her. But what do you think Tao's wrinkles say?
That aging is profound and beautiful and a history of our lives and nothing to be ashamed of. And she just wore it well, and her presence inspired people to embrace getting older, still inspires people to embrace getting older without shame, or just to get better, more beautiful as we age. She's one of those ideas that was one of the great ideas that came into my life that I wanted to share that story. And that's that it's never too late and to never give up. Because I used to say, I met her when I was 40, and I remember even at that age, I was saying, I'm too old for... Meanwhile, she was 93 years old and in ballroom dancing competitions. You know, so, I mean, she was a remarkable teacher. It's interesting that you said Tao right when you said Tao, because she told me long ago, she was telling a story about never looking down on others. She said, You see the farmer who can't read, who's illiterate, knows the soil and feeds the world. I never forgot that.
Mm. That is a beautiful lesson to take to heart. Thank you for sharing. Let's pivot to Otis the Pup. So the story is that you were going to foster him, and 10 minutes after being at your place, you figured out that he was no longer a foster pup, but he was going to be with you. And I know that he came out of a place where the industry had tested on him, and he's just recovered so beautifully. I think that there's probably still some probably ramifications, but it seems like you two have built a beautiful life, and being an advocate for getting off of the current track of animal testing and the like. Can you just talk about a little bit about that story and what rings true for you at the moment?
Ever since I was 15 years old, that's when I started to see a lot of the things that was happening with animals. And I learned about animal testing. I always made changes in my life so I wouldn't contribute to how we treat animals, how we exploit them. And over the years, it really opened up a lot of doors to a lot of information about the realities of the way we treat animals in every department, from factory farming, everything. It was one of those itches that I had when I just talked about how now I don't have that, about being a photographer of the world rather than being an artist of the world. I always knew I wanted to get involved with helping animals, but I never knew how. With my craft, I never really knew how to do it in a way that I felt like I could do it. And then this dog came into my life, and he's just such a good looking dog. Mm. You know, with the number tattooed in his ear and with his story and with me wanting to raise awareness about it, because right now there's over 65,000 dogs in the United States alone in laboratories being tested on. And they found that only 5%, if that, of the testing works for humans.
Wow.
And then so much of the other stuff can be done. There's other ways to do it. Now, we are an evolved, technologically evolved society. And yet they still use dogs to test out toxic fumes, whether it, I don't know if the nicotine, whatever it is, paints, household items, to be able to say on the back that it can cause cancer. And then they usually euthanize the dog afterward. And this is happening with rabbits, horses, cats, it's happening. Monkeys, tons of monkeys. So I wanted to raise awareness about that because it just doesn't seem right.
Mm.
And now that my best friend has endured it, it's impossible for me to compartmentalize and not think that that's my calling. So he's an ambassador for a couple of different companies in which he informs people that you can choose products, all products that have not been tested on animals, shampoos, perfumes, household cleaning items, all of them can be purchased cruelty-free. And not just at Whole Foods. This stuff is readily available at Walmart, at Target. There's a company called Ecos, who he's an ambassador for. Because I wanted people to see the face of animal testing. And this is their pet, their dog. And there's horrible things that happen in that industry. Even some of these companies will go to the pound, the shelter, and adopt dogs to be able to use them in testing. So this is a huge topic, and it's a heartbreaking topic. What more can I say about it? I need all the yoga and meditation that I can do in order to be able to integrate taking on this and not having the ability to turn my attention away from it, but to be able to see what's happening to others in this world and still be able to enjoy life. Because it's overwhelming, the suffering that's occurring on this planet.
Yes, it is. Let's just be very upfront. So the companies that Otis is a brand ambassador for, who are they? And then we'll be able to put them in the show notes as well.
Ecos, E-C-O-S. Okay. That's the main one. And they're available at, like I said, Target and Walmart, Whole Foods, Amazon. And the price is no more. But what people can do is that whenever they buy something, like, for instance, if you go into Whole Foods or Trader Joe's, only sells products that have not been tested on animals. There will always be on the bottle, it'll say cruelty-free on the back, or have a picture of a bunny. It's called the Leaping Bunny. And it'll say cruelty-free. And that just means that animals have not been exploited in order to make that product.
Yeah. So that becomes an easy thing to do. To help make a difference is that just look for that little bunny in the cruelty-free. And as you've got a choice, just steer towards the products that are doing that such that the market share decreases for the others, increases for others. And then we see in a capitalistic society, hey, it's better. And then we move in that direction.
Right. Because everyone that sees and hears his story or sees a little movie that's been made about him, the most common comment is, I want to help. How can I help? What can I do? Yeah. And this is just proactive that anyone can do.
Yeah. Just the intentionality behind it. Become aware, just shift your buying power over to these others. And if you love whatever widget it is or product or whatever, shoot an email and say, hey, consider going this direction. So at least they feel that pressure as well. Yeah.
We are moving into that world. I don't know if you saw on the news, but I mean, this is absolutely mind-blowing. Switzerland labels on their meat packages now. Oh, it's so, I don't want to shock you, but it says this animal was castrated without anesthesia. I mean, I thought it was a joke, but this is really how they're labeling their meat products that I guess are imported. Switzerland has just started labeling the outside of meat packages saying that the animal has suffered.
Gotcha. And capturing what that suffering looked like.
Yes.
Wow.
Which I thought was like, this has to be a joke, but it's not.
Thank you for your life with Otis and sharing with all the followers to bring awareness, because that's exactly what it is. It's awareness. Now, what folks do with that, that's up to them, but at least they can't say that they don't know.
Yeah. Right. Oh, and I forgot to say that rather than just raising awareness, I work for him. I am his personal photographer and his ghostwriter for his Instagram page, Otis the Handsome Hound.
Thank you for the full disclosure in all of your many roles, apart from just being the guy that brings him dinner and taking him out for walks. As we move towards wrapping up, I have this question of what is your right now question? So this is the kind of question that you're working on in life that is beyond what's for lunch and if you're going to get married or not, those kind of bookend kind of questions. But do you have a right now question or a question that resonates with you that you're working with today or in this season?
I think it comes back to how can I do better? Mm-hmm. How can I do better? That's the question that, I mean, cause you said it's not that, am I going to get married? What am I going to have for lunch? It's how can I make use of my time on this planet and be more awake? How can I continue to wake up and be here and face this world raw? And do whatever it is I can do to contribute to the healing in life. I mean, that's really the only question that I ask myself, other than what I'm going to have for lunch.
There is that. That is an important question, yes.
You ruled that out.
Where is the best place for folks to track you down, find out what you're excited about, and follow along?
I think Instagram and Facebook are most up to date because it's like a daily offering. But of course, there's a website, robertstermanstudio.com.
And I will absolutely link to all that in the show notes and also put up references to like the photo that you showed of the soldier that was up on your wall and all these different references. Robert, thank you for pointing your lens in the direction of beauty, inspiring the rest of the world to see it through your eyes and teaching this community about how questions can reveal the beauty around us. Thank you for being on the program.
Thank you, Ken.
Ken here. Robert is a thoughtful and contemplative human who wants to make the world a better place. He consistently shared insights and perspectives that we can easily incorporate into our day-to-day routines to expand the work of generosity. These are four takeaways I captured. What resonated with you? Number one, from taking pictures to making photographs with people. Robert's distinction between, quote, taking and, quote, making photographs reveals a fundamental shift from extraction to collaboration. His approach transforms the camera from a tool of capture into an instrument of connection, where the act of photography becomes a shared creative experience that honors the subject's humanity rather than simply documenting their appearance.
I reflect on the transactional nature of our society, and this slight intentional shift could have a profound effect on those we engage with. Consider an instance of when you were extracted from, and how this shift might have changed your experience if the other party had pursued collaboration. Question: are you taking something from others in your interactions, or are you creating something meaningful together? Number two, paying attention is a form of questioning. Robert discovered in San Quentin Prison that simply honoring someone's existence through focused attention asks the profound question, "Hello, you matter. How are you?" This recognition shows that our most profound questions aren't always verbal. Sometimes the most powerful inquiry is the quality of presence we bring to seeing and acknowledging another person. When I did my walk through Washington, D.C., and encountered those living in poverty, it was most often the conversation I was thanked for, because the overlooked became seen, if only for a few minutes. Question: how does the quality of your attention communicate what you believe about someone's worth? Number three, criticism can become creative fuel when we ask the right questions. When social media critics challenged Robert to photograph, quote, real people instead of idealized beach yogis, he could have dismissed the feedback. Instead, he asked, "What are they talking about? How can I understand this?" This openness to difficult feedback expanded his vision from exclusive beauty to inclusive humanity, transforming his entire artistic mission. Former government executive Jimmy D. Smith explained, "There is no forward motion without friction." Sifting through the online hate to find the grit that will propel us forward is the gift criticism offers. Question: when faced with criticism, do you defend your current path or genuinely explore what truth might be hidden in the challenge? Number four, the question, "How can I be better?" shapes everything. Robert's daily practice of asking this single question influences not just his photography technique, but his approach to being a son, brother, friend, and human being. This demonstrates how a well-chosen question can serve as a compass for continuous growth across all areas of life. Robert has kept his process simple and continues to refine his answer to a life's question. These lifelong companions are patient and won't let us hide. Every morning, they greet us and help us to engage the world more intentionally. Question: what one question, if asked consistently, would most powerfully guide your daily choices and long-term growth? In a time of division and celebrating reasons to despise our neighbors, it is palate-cleansing to hear of Robert's pursuit of beauty in all of its forms. This may inspire us to pause over the keyboard or hold our tongues long enough to encounter others from their vantage point and see their beauty as it already exists. To those on the other side of the speaker, thank you for being here. Gratitude shout out to Beauty Pill for the show's music and producer Ben Ford for the technical help. This episode was recorded on Piscataway land. Please engage with this episode in some manner. Download, follow, save, like, share, or comment about something that resonated. This action ensures we are engaging the questioning community. Until next time, keep questioning.